Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Zenna, a podcast produced by Sunbury Press's Book Speak Network, and you are on episode one. I am your host, Susan Kiskis. In the show, we bring two worlds together, wellness and spirituality. From yoga to Buddhism, healthy eating to turning dreams into reality, listeners will find themselves on a journey into their own spiritual journey. Before we get started, I want to let you know that my new memoir was just released. Let Me Carry You Home chronicles my first journey to India, meeting my guru, and learning about Bhakti Yoga, which happens to tie into today's show. Let Me Carry You Home is available at sunburypressstore.com. If you love this podcast and you like variety in your podcast, you might want to check out the Book Speak Network here on Blog Talk Radio. Sunbury Press has other great shows to appeal to those who are interested in mysteries, horror, and author interviews. So let's get started. Our guest today is Bhakti yogi, kirtan musician, David Newman. David, also known as Durgadas, is a renowned sacred chant master, recording artist, singer-songwriter, best-selling author, and inspirational teacher. He has released numerous CDs and is the author of The Time-Bound Traveler. David is also the founder of the Stay Strong Project and Yoga on Main. He has been featured on NPR, The Washington Post, and Yoga Journal, among many others. LA Yoga Magazine said this about our guest today: David Newman is reminiscent of George Harrison, Dylan, and Paul Simon when they are in soul mode. His newest album, The Beloved, co-created with Filippo Franchini, released this past Friday and is available on iTunes. David, welcome to Zen Up.
Hi, Susan. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So why don't you tell us a little... Thank you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your new album, The Beloved?
The Beloved is a project that I created with a very dear friend named Filippo Franchini, who is a recording artist of his own and a multi-instrumentalist and an amazing guitar player and somebody I've known for many years. He toured with me and played on all my albums, and the two of us have been talking about making an album together, and 10 years later, we've been talking about it for a long time. We found ourselves with the time and at the right place to collaborate on making music together.
That's wonderful. And so when did you guys start on this new album? You said a year ago?
We've worked on it actually for a couple of years. I was approached about making a George Harrison cover album, so we came together to do a song for that, and then the project sort of deviated from that and turned into this collaborative project between Filippo and I. I wrote three songs for it, Filippo wrote three songs for it, and then we did this cover of a George Harrison song called Give Me Love, Give Me Peace on Earth.
That's wonderful. And one of your songs right now is on YouTube, right?
Yeah, the first single from the album is a song called Grateful, and we came out with an animated lyric video for the song, and that was released a couple of weeks ago, as well as the pre-order for the album. But the album was just recently released on April 27th on Friday. I'm on iTunes and Spotify and Amazon, and the first single. The video for the first single is out on YouTube called Grateful.
Wonderful. So I thought we can segue talking about your new album and how that is your continued path of Bhakti Yoga in the act of kirtan. So if you can tell me a little bit about what brought you towards music, and instead of just music in general, also how did that relate into you becoming a Kirtanwala musician?
Sure. Yeah, well, I had been involved in music, you know, since I was a young teenager. I started playing the guitar, and I started writing songs, and that carried with me really until the present moment. I've always been interested in creativity through music, but it wasn't until that I got interested in yoga and then discovered kirtan and devotional music that my creative process through music really came to full expression. It sort of evolved out of my relationship to my spiritual practice. So as somebody, you know, I started meditating when I was young. My parents took my brother and I to be initiated in TM, Transcendental Meditation, when I was about 13 or 14 years old. So I had always been interested in music and always been interested in spirituality. And so when I was exposed to kirtan, which is the coming together of spirituality and music through mantra, it was a natural fit for me. And you know, I got into meditation, then I got into yoga practice, and then through that I got into bhakti and chanting mantras.
Very good. So now with bhakti yoga, tell me do you find that kirtan is your path with bhakti? Because bhakti yoga is the yoga of devotion. And for many bhakti yogis, kirtan does come very naturally into that act of devotion.
Yeah, I view the practice of bhakti yoga, you know, in a variety of aspects, one of which is definitely singing kirtan. And particularly I find singing kirtan accompanied by music with other people to be a very enlightening and ecstatic practice. You know, it's a way of being still, but in the presence of others and through something that's very joyful, and that is singing.
For those listeners who are not familiar with bhakti yoga, it is as I mentioned, it's a form of devotion. My dogs, if you will, are barking in the background. They'll say they're doing their own mini kirtan right now.
yes.
But so there's a variety of ways that people can express that devotion to God. And some people will focus their devotion on Ram, Sita. They will focus their devotion on Krishna, Radhe, Durga, Kali, all these Hindu gods and goddesses. And the means that they do that are by creating altars and having what's called puja every day. So puja could be lighting the candles or burning incense, mantras, you know, and by singing the mantras, then we start to do bhajan. And we take these and we start to sing them in a call response form. That's where we get kirtan. So David Newman, yeah, so you go around the globe, actually, so not just the United States, but you go around the globe and you actually do these kirtans with people where you sing a mantra, a bhajan, and have them sing back to you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, bhakti yoga is the practice of living life with an open heart and being unconditionally loving. And so that's not an easy practice for many, for all of us, really. And so the practice of kirtan comes out of an ancient practice of bhakti, and it really is calibrated to help us feel love and to carry that into our daily lives. And I've had the great pleasure and honor and gift of traveling around the world and sharing these mantras and music and devotional ideas through music with, you know, spiritual seekers all over the United States, Japan, Europe, Costa Rica, Mexico. And it's really a movement. You know, there's now festivals where ensembles come together and chant mantras and sing kirtan for hours at a time. So it's a very relevant practice to a very, you know, complex world right now. And feeling love is a very simple thing, and singing together is a real sacred act. So it's like I said, it's been a great gift to share this practice with others. And you know, everybody loves music, and this is just a way of taking music to another level because the mantras have this vibrationally healing component to them. And so when they're combined with music that people can relate to, it becomes a very universal a healing practice.
So one of the things I always hear, I've experienced myself, and then I hear other people experience, is that when they are in a kirtan, it takes them into a very deep meditative state. So it acts as a meditation for them. And which,
yes.
So I'm curious as to what your experience with that is, your feedback, because one of the things I know that you and I've talked about is Japa Mala, which is using a mantra and repeating that over and over again as your form of meditation. So do you have experience where or any thoughts on how a kirtan can take you into that meditative state, and what can you do in that space?
Well, the mantras that I chant and that are typically chanted within a kirtan, if it's oriented toward this practice that we're speaking of, are chanted in Sanskrit, and they come from ancient texts. And they literally, these mantras, they were revealed, and they have a kind of inherent technology to bring people into not just a focused or balanced or meditative state, but sometimes an ecstatic state as well. And these mantras kind of cut through the conditional mesh, meaning that somebody could walk into a kirtan, like a friend of theirs may have already be interested and familiar with kirtan, and bring somebody new. And somebody who comes in has no idea what the meaning of the mantra is. So it's not cerebral. It's not coming in from a place of understanding. It's coming in from this place of deep spiritual longing, or even like the transcendent emotionality. Somebody will come in and start to sing and chant the mantra, and it'll take them into this deep place of stillness, or it can bring up something and they can have a real cathartic release, or it could make them, it can bring about a deep and profound state of well-being or expansive happiness. And so that's what these mantras were designed to do. I call them, the most ancient form of sound healing technology. What I love is that they function beyond that of understanding. They just go right to the core, to our souls, if you will.
Yeah, one of the things I loved was I was doing an Ayurveda study with actually Himalayan Institute. And in one of the classes, we were talking about sound, sound being the first, because of the ether. In Ayurveda, it goes by the different elements. And so ether would be the first one, and so before there was sound, there was nothing. And then there was sound. Mm. The first sound was the sound Om. And it reminded me very much of the Christian Bible, because it actually does talk about, there was silence, I think, and then there was the word, so there's that similarity there, how there is nothing, and then the first sound is the sound of God. And these ancient rishis who were sitting in these caves and jungles in India, who were in these states of meditation, were able to extrapolate through their meditation all these, as you mentioned, these words in this ancient language that were constructed for healing and spiritual growth.
That's beautiful. Exactly. And, the relationship in a kirtan between sound and silence is very profound, because some sounds bring you out, mantra sounds bring you in. And so through the sound, it brings you back into the silence, into the nothingness. Another way that I like to say it is somebody will come in encumbered in a kirtan, involved in the orbit of personal drama, and then singing, chanting the mantras will foster a sense of personal absence, which is very gratifying. It's just kind of a release of the tension of the dramas of life. And it happens often in a kirtan without you doing anything except chanting. And that's really lovely, because getting out of the mind is not an easy thing to do.
And for those of you who are interested in learning more about kirtan, and you don't necessarily have access to kirtan in your communities, David, you actually do, is it every Tuesday evening you go on Facebook Live and you have like a mini kirtan essentially?
Yeah, and I can't say every Tuesday because it is contingent upon my travel schedule and my personal life. So it's something that I try to, you know, I've been doing it for the last 2 years on Tuesday nights on my Facebook page at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. I don't make it every Tuesday night, but I try to do my best when I can. And it is. I will usually do a couple of chants and then give a talk about some of the principles of the practice. And it's an intimate way for me to connect, you know, with my community. I like to say using technology in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it was really funny. Like, I remember my first experience of seeing spiritual leaders who you wouldn't think to use technology was there was actually a group of Buddhist monks that were visiting the area. I had a yoga studio at the time, and we invited them over. I was bringing them dinner to their hotel, and everyone's on their phones and computers and TV. And so when I went to India and I see all these like swamis and sadhus with phones, it doesn't surprise me anymore. But I think that's where technology has grown into this beautiful space, is that we're able to use technology now to share with people different forms of spiritual practice. And in this case, for kirtan, and as you mentioned, you're able to share a lesson with everyone in that talk as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's something that I really enjoy. It's incredible how I can, you know, sit with my phone broadcasting to people in many different countries and feel like everybody's there with me. It's a testament to the connectedness of it all.
So one of the things I'm curious about is, in your opinion, because you've also been to India several times and you're traveling the world, so you see yoga practices at various, you know, continents, is that how does bhakti tie into what we look at as yoga in the West? So, you know, we have our first kirtan, if you will, with Yogananda, I think in 1923 at Carnegie Hall. And then after that, it kind of disappeared. And then Srila Prabhupada, at I think 69 years old, he came to the United States, and within a year, he's reintroducing kirtan in the 60s. But I feel like it's still a very background, underground thing. Yoga in the West, for the most part, seems to be the asana practice. So how do you see bhakti yoga tying in with yoga as we see and we practice in the West?
Well, yoga has evolved. You know, I opened a yoga center 25 years ago in Philadelphia, and I've seen so many changes, one of which is that back in 1992 when I opened it, there was, you know, we were it. There was one yoga center. Now there's hundreds of yoga centers in the area. And now something interesting that's happening is people are opening up these kind of independent meditation centers as well. For instance, in Philadelphia, the only independent meditation center outside an ashram setting was the Shambhala centers, and now there's a handful of meditation centers as well that have spread. Similar, you know, other forms of yoga, like we mentioned, bhakti yoga. When I started traveling and singing it, it was pretty much limited to yoga centers. And you know, even if you look at when I had my yoga center, when I was running my yoga center in the mid-90s, we hosted Krishna Das, who's one of the most well-known kirtan walas, kirtan singers. And he had probably about 50 people came to our yoga center to chant with him. And, you know, now he fills up churches and holds, you know, 1,000 people or more come to chant with him. Similarly, now in 2018, you know, I'll play at festivals. I'm playing at a festival 2019 called Festival of Colors, which is a festival for an Indian holiday, a Western festival called Holi, in Spanish Fork, Utah, and they get 50,000 people that come, and all the musicians that play on the stage are kirtan singers, pretty much. So it's expanded, you know, and not everybody who necessarily practices physical, you know, hatha yoga gravitates towards kirtan, but it is a practice that is drawing more people, and I've seen that over the years.
Now, of course, what we talk about kirtan here is an off event, right? Where if we're lucky in our community, there is a kirtanwala who comes to a yoga studio or a festival, or even sometimes I've seen, you know, kirtans performed or held in churches. India, it's
absolutely.
Just a way of life. It's every day, right? Every day.
Oh,
I remember,
it is.
Like,
it's just,
yeah.
It, yeah, yeah.
No, please go ahead. Tell me about, you know, your experience in India.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the places that I've been to India are very bhakti yoga centric. So there's kirtan going on. You know, last time I was there, I was in a little town called Ramgarh, and they were celebrating festival after festival after holiday, and they, in the middle of town, they had a little hall and they had microphones on the stage, and they had speaker horns that would blast in the entire town. So they had kirtan and bhajans going on almost 24 hours a day, but not just in this little hole, but it, you know, you could hear it all over the town. Sort of like how the Muslims, they have the call to prayer and they have it on the loudspeakers over the whole town. You know, in India, it's just a way of life, and not just in that sort of, you know, big way, but families just pull out the harmonium after a meal and just sing together. It's just a natural way of life.
Do you think that there is just a need, a longing in this country and that's why probably bhakti yoga is even growing really quickly? As I mentioned,
sure.
In the 60s, and there was this lull, but I feel like in the past 10 years, bhakti yoga has really increased in the United States, at least. And I'm just wondering if you feel like that there is just something that we're missing in our daily lives, that the act of bhakti yoga or kirtan in general is calling to us.
It's connection that's lacking. You know, I travel a lot. I sit in airports and you know, whether it's going out to restaurants or wherever, and people are looking into their screens and they're everybody's in the same room, but nobody's feeling connected. So it's a rare opportunity when a group of people come and align themselves spiritually. And it's a very gratifying feeling, again, because it fosters that sense of absence of separative self and that sense of feeling connected to a greater whole and to each other. I feel that just we've lost in our culture the beauty of just singing together. It's such a, you know, and then you in addition to that, singing together, you sing these mantras that are very spiritually uplifting. And it's an experience, if somebody is simply open-minded enough to have the experience, will definitely fortify and nourish them.
And so one of the things I mentioned to you before we went live on air, I wanted to get to. So, you know, we've talked about how kirtan is this arm of bhakti yoga, but was a quote that actually from you, which you said, let life be a total sadhana. And so sadhana is spiritual practice. Can you explain a little bit more about how bhakti yoga can be a complete spiritual practice that envelops your entire day?
Sure, Susan. It really comes down to a very simple understanding that the word bhakti means unconditional love. So when somebody says, I'm practicing bhakti yoga, it means they're practicing unconditional love. And when we move through our lives, whether it's in relationship to ourselves or in relationship to others, throughout every day, we are challenged. And we get upset and we get angry and we take something personally and we feel slighted, or we, you know, there's some agitation that comes up, or we feel like we want to point our fingers at a finger at another person and blame them for something. So there is the knee-jerk reactions throughout the day to love conditionally based upon getting what we think we deserve or what we want. Loving unconditionally means to love as a state of being, regardless if thing goes our way or regardless if somebody does what we want them to do. So practicing bhakti yoga as a way of life means to continuously resist the knee-jerk reaction, you know, to want to react and to want to cut ourselves up from love, and to resist closing our heart to ourselves, to another person, to a situation, and keeping our heart open. And that requires awareness. It requires attention. It requires reflection and self-inquiry and forgiveness and compassion and understanding and kindness and letting go. All those things that every single yogic path, spiritual path, religion at its essence advocates. We could, you know, sit at our altar and chant for a half an hour a day and then show up, you know, honking our horns at other and being bitter and blaming throughout the day. So the real practice is, how are we living and leading our lives? And what, you know, are we being exemplary of that embodiment of unconditional love? And it's not a choice we make every day. It's a choice we make every moment. I don't know that anybody ever masters it, and in that sense, it's a practice, since we're always aspiring to love with a wider scope, you know. And you know, I love this one Ram Dass, you know, quote. He says, "It's not about who we love; it's about who we don't love." So the practice becomes not the places that we are loving. The practice comes to places that we're not exhibiting love. That's where the practice is.
Yeah, I think it was also Ram Dass who said something, if you think you're enlightened, spend a weekend with your family.
Right. Right, exactly. I mean, we have, whether it's with our family or at work, or the person who walks in front of us at the grocery store, or the person who cuts us off in their car, whatever it is, those are our opportunities. And love doesn't always mean we're being passive. It doesn't always mean we're being gentle. We can be fierce. We can be active. It's really just what we're carrying in our heart. That's the point. It's the attitude with which we're approaching life and meeting others.
And so for someone that's looking to really become more heart-centered and rooted, what are suggestions or tools that you you feel like has worked for you, worked for your students, that you would be able to pass along?
I think self-remembering is a big one, you know, just reminding yourself every day that you choose to live in love and being very attentive when fear is ruling your life. A simple practice I like to do, especially when you're feeling contracted or fearful or you're feeling reactive or unsure about what's next in the moment, is just to put your hand on your heart and really get in touch with your heart, not your head. You know, it's like I say, it's one of the longest journeys you'll ever take, about 10 or 12 inches from your head to your heart. And really get in touch. Mm-hmm. What does your heart want in this moment? What is the heartfelt response? What is the loving approach in this situation? And something like, kirtan practice has been incredibly helpful for me in working with mantras, because they do transform our vibration. Getting out of the head through the head doesn't work. So there has to be some technique, some tool that helps draw us into our hearts. It's hard to do that when we're wrapped up in ourselves and our own drama. So something like mantra chanting. The thing I love about kirtan is that, you know, it's a medicine, but it's also, if you listen to the music I make and the music other artists make, we take these mantras and we sweeten them up with, you know, pretty melodies and nice chord progressions and instrumentation, so that if you enjoy listening to music, just, it doesn't have to be my album. You know, go on Spotify or iTunes and look up kirtan or mantras or the different artists that are doing this, and listen to this music and start to let it infiltrate your life. And once you start to hear these mantras, you start to get drawn in. And then you could look at your local, one of the things that was not so existent when I started traveling was these local community kirtan groups. And now these community kirtan groups exist in so many different cities. So you can go on Google and look the city you live in and look under kirtan and see what's going on. And it's a beautiful thing to chant with a group of like-minded souls. There's also festivals like Bhakti Fest and Hanuman Festival and Love Light Festival, and where you can go spend a weekend and get immersed in the practice. And the other thing is just reading books, gravitate toward books about spiritual practice and spiritual teachers that you enjoy their writing and feel inspired by. Like I said, I mean, bhakti yoga is a powerful path to feeling and experiencing and choosing more love in your life. It's not the only one. The most important thing is to find the right tools, the right teachings, and the right teachers to support you in living a more spiritual, holistic, and joyful life.
So I love the nugget when you were saying getting out of the head through the head does not work. That was beautiful, because I think a lot of times that's what we do. That's what we do. We then analyze ourselves, not from a place of love.
Right. We just cycle. We just spin in the same orbit.
Mm-hmm. But since you mentioned books, as an author, I have to ask, do you have a favorite bhakti yoga book?
I don't know that I have a favorite book. You know, I've never found the one definitive book, because bhakti is such a vast topic. My friend Girish wrote a beautiful book about mantras, which I don't remember the name of right now, but his name is Girish, G-I-R-I-S-H. Beautiful, modern book that I think is very good. Russell Paul also wrote a book. I think it's called The Yoga of Sound. While I'm talking, I'm going to look up the Girish book, because I have a computer right here, and I'll tell you the name of it. Because he's a modern Kirtanwala, and I think has a really nice understanding of it. It's called Music and Mantras, The Yoga of Mindful Singing. Yeah, The Yoga of Mindful Singing for Health, Happiness, Peace, and Prosperity by Girish.
Wonderful. One of my favorite books is by Radhanath Swami. I don't know if you've read it. It's called The Journey Home.
I have. It's a beautiful book.
Yeah. It's a wonderful book. I had, when I had my studio, there was actually a Kirtan group who came in, a duo, and it was not my first experience at Kirtan, but it was my first experience with the learning more about Radhanath Swami. And so they were like, no, they were reading through the book as a break through each of the bhajans. And so at the end, they're like, oh, you'll love this book. And I got it, and I, like, devoured it within a week. And it's a beautiful story. You know, it's the most basic sense. It was a kid in, I think, the 60s who was on a spiritual journey, who went to India and found his bhakti yoga practice. And it's just, it's so timeless. And I think that so many Go ahead.
It's a beautiful book. I've read it.
Yeah. So it also captures, like, I think what you also, you know, your many travels to India is that when we start on this spiritual journey, we continue, like, looking and searching for more, you know. I feel like we are left breadcrumbs that, you know, we constantly follow this path as long as we're open and we listen.
One of the things that distinguishes the bhakti path is the path is centered around that longing, that yearning. It's not a path of finality, and rather than sort of, you know, seeking that path of finality in a kind of way that's desperate, bhakti is really about enjoying the journey. It really continues to expand and open as you move. It deepens and becomes richer, and rather than when you start off, you feel like you need to know the answers. By the time you're knee deep in bhakti, you know, it's not about getting the answers. You know, they kind of become irrelevant. It's just being on the journey and the joy of what's being revealed to you every day of our lives. By the way, I wanted to also mention that several years back, I wrote a spiritual autobiography called The Time-Bound Traveler. And that's a book that I describe the nature of my spiritual awakening and also my relationship with bhakti yoga practice. And a lot of what I teach is how the path of love can be a conduit for spiritual awakening, for remembering who we are.
Wonderful. And people can buy that book on your website, right?
Or Amazon. It's on Kindle or hard copy, you know, soft paperback. My website will take them to Amazon.
Very good. David, thank you so much for your time today. It was such a pleasure talking with you, and I'm so grateful to discuss bhakti yoga and the concept of being in that space of unconditional love.
It's my joy, Susan, and it, you know, as I travel and meet people, you know, bhakti really transcends ideology and distinctions. And so, if someone's practicing love and kindness in their life, they're a bhakti yoga practitioner, regardless of how they're doing it. And that's really what we need more of, is just loving souls being out there in the world.
Thank you so much.
My joy, Susan. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. To learn more about David Newman, to see if he's going to be in your neck of the woods for a kirtan, a workshop, to learn more about his new album, get his book, or also just even become a student of his, feel free to go to his website, which is davidnewmanmusic.com. You can also follow him on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, and I hope you have an unconditional loving day.